The Huddle with New Zealand Sotheby's International Realty. Exceptional marketing for every property.
On The Huddle with me this evening, we have Matt Heath of Hauraki and we have Jack Tame of Q&A and News Talk ZB. Hello, you two.
Hello.
Yeah,
go on then, Matt. Would you throw money at that?
I think targets are interesting because, say, for example, I could set a target to not drink two bottles of red wine every night and end up drinking one, and you wouldn't say that was a healthy target.
Well, so
I think
one in three quarters.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's right, and it still wouldn't be healthy. So target, just hitting a target, you might question the value of the target, and if we're still funding 75% of it, then what is the aim of it? Is the aim for it to ever be profitable, or is it always just going to be funded by us? I don't know. You know, that's
well,
the thing.
I don't know. Because it's clearly...
$90 per passenger per leg, apparently. Is the subsidy that we're all paying for this particular train.
Jack, when you look at that and you say we're in May and the funding runs out at the end of July, I would say that's the end of that. What do you think? It's not looking good.
Yeah, I certainly wouldn't be surprised if this government were to cut funding. Having gone over the government policy statement on land transport, there doesn't seem to be a profound level of enthusiasm when it comes to rail. And look, I think, you know, I'm the first to admit that I have leaned into teasing this train service, you know, over its first couple of months in operation. But that being said, I do think for stuff like this, you need to take a slightly longer term perspective. Like, as that interviewee noted, like, these are very early days. And I think in an ideal world, if you could have a really reliable, consistent, regular train service between our biggest city and our fastest growing city, it's an absolute no-brainer. The problem is when you start a service like this, it takes time to actually
hold on,
get
Jack.
Momentum.
No, stop it now. Come on, no. Give yourself an uppercut. Jack, you can't have a train that takes longer than a car.
No, I don't think you can. I agree with that.
Unless,
I mean, it takes longer than a car for now, right? But if more and more people are driving between our fastest growing city and our biggest city, which is an entirely reasonable thing to expect in the future, then maybe those drive times start to drop a little bit either. And maybe then you look back and say, damn, if only 30 years ago we'd actually invested in a regular train service that, what do you know,
but is taking more cars off the road. Why don't we take ourselves seriously and put a faster train on it?
Well, I would love that, but how much would that require in terms of subsidies? Because here's the thing, all public transport requires subsidies. But the thing that people seem to forget is that the good thing about public transport is that it actually gets cars off the road. So it means that people who do choose to drive can get to their destination a whole lot faster. And I think a route like Auckland to Hamilton is absolutely ripe for much better public transport services than we currently have. Not every route in New Zealand is suited.
I'm going to come to you, Matt. No, but Jack,
but,
no, hold on a second.
Here's the thing. Absolutely right for really good commuter service.
If you do it like you do, like this has been done, which is like a half-hearted attempt at it, that's why nobody catches it, because it's dumb and it's a waste of their time. If you put a proper fast train on, you will get people actually catching it because it works.
I totally agree. So how much is a bullet train going to cost? How much is a fast train going to cost?
We don't need a bullet train. You just need one that runs like properly.
But if you're never going to have a bullet train, if we're never going to have enough money to have a bullet train, then what's the point of slowly bleeding us to death with the train that's never going to work?
You're definitely not going to have money for a bullet train.
These are the things. I mean, these are the payoffs. I agree that an even faster train service would be preferable. A train service that went end-to-end immediately would be preferable, but obviously that's going to cost a lot more.
It doesn't
if it's
even stop in Tuakau and Pokeno.
I agree. So we should improve the train service. I totally agree. But guess what? Those sorts of improvements are going to cost more money. And if we're all moaning about the subsidies
that
are required,
they will pick
stage,
up more people, Jack, and then the money will be offset.
So you're advocating for better public services. That is better public transport services.
Oh my
gosh. Fantastic to hear. The problem is that it's going to cost more money.
Yeah,
but the thing is,
Jack, you would be happy if we just had. If you take your argument to a logical conclusion, why don't we just get a couple of horses and put a cart on the back and call it a train?
I'm suggesting at some point you have to say, okay, how much public money are we prepared to get in this and try and build a bit of a commuter base who are going to use a service like this, and how far are we prepared to extend? I mean, if you were to spend, say, we want to have an absolute supreme deluxe service, but it's going to cost $3 billion between Auckland and Hamilton, no one would support that kind of expenditure. So somewhere you have to draw the line, and I don't think so far that this is necessarily an unreasonable place to have drawn it. I would love better services as well. You guys just have to accept that if we're going to have better services, that's going to cost more money.
But aren't they two different things? So you can have a better service, or you can have this service going forever and costing a lot of money and not ever delivering the better service. So it's either do the better service or don't do anything.
Do it properly or don't do it at all. because it's just so bad for the branding of the train system.
Okay, I mean, like I say, you have to draw the line somewhere, guys. But it's great to hear you both advocating for much.
Don't do that, Jack.
Look, I love a train. I love a train.
I love buses. Do you love buses?
But I just don't like that train. It just feels like a bit of a lame train.
Matt, he's trying to shame us. Like, we don't catch public transport. You catch public transport?
I rode an e-bike in just now, Jack.
Yeah,
I'm not trying to shame you guys. I'm just taking your argument to its logical conclusion, which is either if you're going to do something, do it right. I think we're your exact words. And so the answer to that is, okay, $4 billion
Great. We've spent way too long debating something that is literally about to have a funding pulled. Anyway, we'll come back in a tick.
The Huddle with New Zealand Sotheby's International Realty. Unparalleled reach and results.
All right, you're back with The Huddle, Jack Tame and Matt Heath. Matt, do you reckon we should regulate the property managers? I'm gutted they're not doing that.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know about property managers. I mean, I've watched Renters, that TV show, quite a lot, and there's some horrible renters out there.
Have you not ever rented?
Rented? Yeah, I have rented.
Have you rented something out?
Well, I have rented things out.
And how was your property managers? Were they all awesome?
Very good. For a reputable property manager and they're fine, and then you don't have to go through the awkward confrontations that you get if you actually have to talk to the people living in your house.
Okay. Yeah. Jack?
Yeah, I think I'm with you on this, Heather. I'd like to see more details behind the benefit-cost analysis on this, because you certainly hear anecdotally of some real horror stories when it comes to property managers. There are some fantastic property managers out there. Don't get me wrong about that. But, I would have thought something like this would give renters and landlords a little more security. Yeah. And it seems to me like an area that is pretty ripe for regulation. That being said, you've got to weigh up the costs. And
$2.40 a week.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't have thought over
what's $2.40 a week?
That's how much it would cost to regulate it per property.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, that's a bit different then, isn't it?
I mean, seriously.
You never hear numbers like $2.40, do you? You always hear. When I hear a small number like that, it makes me change my mind completely.
If that's what it would cost us to run Te Huia.
But I think we've got this whole thing now where we just think landlords are bad and anything to do with landlords, and we're getting out of control. But without landlords and without properties and without it being easy for people to have properties and rent them out, then it's not very good for renters either, is it?
I think the key is, though, that this protects landlords as well as renters, eh? That's the thing with regulation. Like, you actually hear horror stories from landlords' perspectives, being like, I'm paying this person all this money and they're doing an atrocious job of monitoring my property, of caring for it, of taking care with my my tenants. And so I think the purpose of the regulation had been to protect both landlords and renters.
Yeah, but I guess if you just hire a gang member to look after your house or something, I guess maybe do some due diligence.
Yeah, and get one for $2.40, though?
Yeah, a non-patched gang member to do it. I think you probably want to go for an established.
I think if we
an established gang or an established property manager, let's just get that on the record.
Yeah, well, maybe go for an established gang over an unestablished gang, but preferably an established property management company.
Jack, do you reckon that Grey Power's got a point? We like actually testing elderly drivers for dementia instead of testing them for ability to drive is kind of pointless.
No, at the moment it's kind of wishy-washy in that it's up to their health practitioners. I actually think that's really good. I think that's a good way of doing it. I think that you would hope that GPs know their patients really well and, not know what kind of condition they're in. And it seems to me to be a good way of doing it. And I'm not sure that we necessarily have the resources for everyone over the age of 75 to be going out and doing practical driving tests all the time. So, yeah, I actually don't have a huge problem with the status quo.
What do you reckon?
I think it's ageist. I think if you can pass the driver's test, then you can drive a car. And that's a very different thing. And, who knows about your dementia cognitive test and the accuracy of that. But as long as once you reach a certain age, you have to sit a driver's test maybe sit them more regularly. I think if you can pass the driver's test, you can pass the driver's test.
Well, I don't know dementia all that well, but does dementia not just make you forget your wife's name, that kind of thing? Does it, do you also forget where the gear stick is?
Guys, I'm not sure we understand the test as it stands. Like, my understanding is that you have to go and get sign off from a health professional, from your GP, essentially.
No. That happens every two years from 80,
does it?
But 75, you have to do a test, and it's a dementia test. So even if you haven't got dementia, you have to do a dementia test.
So what you're saying, Heather, is that you may be a perfectly good driver, but you go to the wrong place. You end up at a house that you were living in 25 years ago.
Yeah.
You end up at the ex-wife's house.
Yeah.
That's fine as long as you don't run over any pedestrians.
As long as you drove over there, okay. Guys, it's good to talk to the pair of you. Thank you so much. Matt Heath and Jack Tamer huddle this evening.
For more from Heather Duplessy-Allen Drive, listen live to News Talk ZB from 4 p.m. weekdays or follow the podcast on iHeartRadio.